I will open the Joint Committee on Ballot Measures 66 and 67. Before we start the meeting, I would actually like to give an opportunity for each of the members of the committee to give a short introduction of where they're from, what district they represent. So I'll start with the elderly gentleman to the left.
Oh,
the blonde gentleman.
Which one of them?
Oh, the elderly.
I can't wait to find out how I get described.
Representative Chris Garrett from House District 38, Lake Oswego in southwest Portland.
No description. I'm a careful person.
Smart. State Representative Vicki Berger. I represent West Salem, parts of South Salem, the communities of Monmouth and Independence.
And Arnie Roman, District 9. I represent the area from Charleston to the south and Florence to the north, so on the coast.
State Senator Diane Rosenbaum, District 21, which is southeast Portland, a little of northeast Portland, and Milwaukee.
Chris Telfer, Senator from District 27, sunny central Oregon.
Richard Devlin, Senator from Senate District 19, Lake Oswego, Westland, Tualatin, a portion of the city of Portland, two small communities of Durham and River Grove. The first item of business for the committee will be to adopt committee rules. These are basically pretty standard rules. Representative Roblin, do we have a motion?
Mr. Kocher, I move that we adopt the proposed joint committee rules dated October 20th, 2009.
Okay. Representative Roblin has moved that we adopt the proposed committee rules dated October 20th, 2009. Is there any discussion? Yes.
Can I just ask a question? I'm not sure it has specific to these rules, but I've been to a number of board meetings, particularly lately, where they go through the bylaws and make sure that what they're doing they can do. So my question is, are we actually properly constituted by constitution and meeting before we adopt the rules?
Yes.
Both of these rules were sent to the Secretary of the Senate and also the Chief Clerk in the House, and they were...
I meant the body and the process.
The Joint Committee.
Joint Committee.
What's the authority?
The authority was within the HB 2414 and was appointed by the Speaker of the President and the House.
Okay, thank you.
Any additional questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Yeah, I did have a question about rule number one, and that specifically the language that says, oh, the rules can be amended. Oh, I see. Never mind.
Okay.
Never mind.
Any additional questions? Any objections? Seeing no objection, motion passes. Committee members, the task before us here today is basically to hear public testimony on the proposed ballot titles and explanatory statements for ballot measure 66 and 67. I'm going to open a public hearing on those, both of those measures simultaneously. We will be meeting again tomorrow to deliberate and to take final action on those ballot measures, final action by the legislature. Those measures are subject, obviously, to judicial review. I would state that today that we do have a limited amount of time. We have about 4 hours in which to hear from the public. We had published that we were going to allow 3 minutes per party to testify, but given the number of people that we have and the fact that people have signed up for both measures, we're going to expand that to four, but ask that you testify on both measures simultaneously, because virtually everyone has indicated, except for one person out here, has indicated that they want to testify on both measures. Now, I will have to be, and when Co-Chair Roblin takes over for me later in the meeting, we will have to be very tight on the time, because we're trying to protect everyone's ability to participate in this process. So when you go over time, you're actually taking away time from another person that wants to testify. So I hope you will understand that there will be times that if you do go over, I will have to almost stop you mid-sentence. I will ask that the committee administrator keep time and give an indication, which you will show, let's see, 15 seconds. I'm visually challenged also, but I can see this.
Time is up. I can see that one.
Time is up, and you have 15 seconds left. So with that, could the committee administrator give a brief overview of the committee's role?
Of the committee's role in the process?
Yes.
So basically, the committee has been tasked with the job to pull together and to draft a ballot title, which... the co-chairs have provided a draft available for you, but that ballot title is includes the caption, a result of yes, a result of no, and a summary. In addition to that, the committee will be doing an explanatory statement. Those statements are due to be filed with the Secretary of State's office by the 26th of October.
Also, I would indicate for the record that we are here to hear testimony on that proposed ballot title and explanatory statement. The underlying measures, this is not the revenue, this is neither the House nor the Senate revenue committees of the legislature. Our role is not here to debate the measures themselves, but to debate how accurately we pose the question before the public and how accurate and the explanation is we provide to the public for what the result of their vote will be, yes or no, and an explanation of the measure. So with that, I'm just going to start down the list. Nobody...
Mr. Chair, if you'd indulge one question for me to set the stage here. The committee is charged with writing the ballot title measure, but could you explain, please, how the proposed language before us was derived?
Okay. The proposed language... basically, obviously, this whole process was set in motion by the passage of the legislation. Both Representative Roblin and I have reviewed language over much of the last 4 or 5 days and have asked for changes to that language. Obviously, this is proposed language to the committee. I will leave it at that. Representative Roblin, do you have anything?
Yeah, I mean, we felt that the two of us should at least get something out there for us to have a conversation about. And so Senator Devlin and I have been working on this.
Follow-up, Mr.
Yes.
Chair? Was this written by committee staff? Was this written by you or written by someone else and reviewed by you?
Okay. My understanding is committee staff, Ms. Herzog, was involved. Legislative Council has been involved. We have asked for clarifications from Legislative Revenue and Legislative Fiscal. I think staff in both the President's office and the Speaker's office have been involved, and I have utilized primarily my Chief of Staff in terms of actually my personal contacts on this, which have been somewhat limited, actually, and that's Miss Abby Tibbs that's in the back of the room.
So the groups you just mentioned are the authors of the proposed language?
They are the parties that have been involved in crafting the language. Go ahead.
I contend that the crafters are Senator Devlin and myself. They didn't use every word that we talked about when they finally typed it up, but the reality is we had conversations back and forth, we got information, and then this is the result of that.
Okay, so I guess that's what I'm looking for, the authorship of the document before
us.
Thank you.
Okay, we are going to start off now. Each party will have 4 minutes. I would ask members of the committee that if they have questions to hold it for the end of each panel and to, I don't think I need to actually say it this way, but just so that we can get through these, to please ask questions. The time for statements or positions will actually be at tomorrow's meeting. So I'm going to call up 3 people in a row, actually, basically. Mr. McCormick, Ms. Fast, and Mr. Brent DeHart. And you will each have 4 minutes, but I will hold questions off until all 3 of you have completed. And Mr. McCormick, do you want to start off the testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Pat McCormick. I'm here as the Communications Coordinator for Oregonians Against Job-Killing Taxes. I'm going to make just some general comments in relation to the ballot title drafts that were provided yesterday. Our concern has been all along the politicization of the process by having it done outside the normal parameters where in a nonpartisan way the Attorney General's office drafts ballot titles for measures that are referred or initiated. Part of our concern is that while some components of the applicable statute related to explanatory statements and the ballot titles were preempted by what you did in 2414. The substance of ORS 250-035 still apply as it relates to the language, the purpose, and so forth of which you are writing. It's intended to be language that's in unbiased and parallel and impartial. And our concern is that in the draft, at least that we have seen so far on these measures, both of them tend not to be as unbiased, clear, and impartial as the statute requires. A couple of specific things that apply to both measures, because both of these measures are retroactive to January 1, 2009. That's an important piece of information for taxpayers to understand when they consider these measures, and that isn't referenced in these ballot title captions and questions. They are both permanent tax increases, and that permanence should also be part of what's referenced in there. And the measures also make the measure ballot titles, I should say, make speculative statements about the funding and what happens with state funding. These bills are not tied to specific pieces of appropriation, specific budget items. Individually, while both of them say that they maintain budgets, individually, if one passed and the other failed, obviously budgets wouldn't be maintained at the current level. Neither bill is particularly tied to the individual expenditures that are identified. The legislature will be in special session weeks after this election to be able to make decisions about how, if these measures fail, allocations will be made, other considerations of revenue and finance, the use of reserves and so forth, would all be part of the purview of the legislature at the time that it convenes. Oregon's recession also could continue the decline. The numbers involved here could be more difficult to balance when we're back in special session. And at that point, again, these measures by themselves would not maintain current budgets. The financial information that's included in the ballot title more appropriately belongs in the estimate of financial impact that would accompany the ballot title in the brass pamphlet and on the ballot. So those pieces of information probably are more appropriately placed elsewhere. Again, our concern is the change of the process that opens the door to politics being a component in how these ultimately are drafted. But I would just commend to the committee that the language is going to still have to pass the ultimate test of the statute. And if it, in the view of those who are involved in this today, doesn't do that, then there will be, I'm sure, a challenge in the state Supreme Court of the language.
Please proceed and identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, chairs, members of the committee. Appreciate the opportunity to speak. My name is Brent DeHart. I run a family health C corporation. Owns a corner gasoline station, and I was the chief petitioner for Measure 67 to the ballot. I do have some objections to some of the language in the draft and some suggestions to it. My objections include what I see as some bias and misleading wording, and I would like to just go through the language specifically, and I'll limit my my comments to Measure 67, as that's the only one I was a chief petitioner for. And I'll just go through a couple of examples in the language and then leave you with a few suggestions. Starting with the result of the yes vote language, with due respect to the authors, I think that if your English teachers were here, they'd cringe a bit. The reference in the 0.1% rate has no reference in the sentence to what that's a rate of, and therefore I think it is going to be confusing to the public that it is referencing something that's not included in the sentence and should be cleaned up and could be clearer for the public. And the result of a no vote, it fails to say that it retains the current tax rate for profitable companies. It does say it retains the 10% corporate minimum. But I feel that other retaining of companies who are profitable should also be included. I feel the statement, some businesses will pay no tax on income. I don't see how that's not a falsehood. Unless if it's in reference to sole proprietorships, they do pay it, but they do not pay it in the corporate structure. They, as you know, they pay it in the personal structure. If that's what it references, then the statement does not say what is actually truthful. And I would flip that aside, and what is missing from the yes vote language is that many businesses will pay a higher tax on no income. And that is what's missing. It's a flagrant missing piece of this language, that the minimum tax has to do with companies with no income, and they will get tax increases. Moving on, summary, under current law, corporations pay the $10 minimum tax. No, they don't. Only corporations with no income pay the minimum. It sounds as though you want the public to believe that all corporations pay the minimum. That's the way the sentence reads. And again, this, the language using all other businesses pay no minimum income tax would lead a voter to believe that the majority of businesses aren't paying any income tax. If you, again, if you mean sole proprietors, it should say so, and it should be a reference to the sole proprietors paying personal income tax at a higher rate. Down in the explanatory statement, there's a sentence that says, the measure increases the tax C corporations will pay on profits. Okay, it also increases tax on no profits. Again, that's misleading. You're raising taxes, and for me, this is my personal story, so it's very important that the small business voice and their reality be pointed out in this instance. It doesn't just increase taxes on profits. It raises taxes on gross receipts. And that's where I would put the language at the bottom of what is our one-page summary. Oregon revenue in the next paragraph. Revenues will pay a minimum tax of approximately. I think that minimum tax language would more accurately reflect a gross receipts tax. They're not going to pay a minimum tax. We're now going to be paying a gross receipts tax. So five quick suggestions. One would be to make a reference in this S-Corp and LLC taxes, which are mentioned several times, to being filing fees, and that the income is treated as the personal tax, because I don't think the public understands that 9% rate is higher. And it's, again, the same treatment for sole proprietors. I mentioned the gross receipt tax. And most importantly, that the yes vote raises taxes on companies with no net income. I think it will be critical in public's understanding of the language in the explanatory statements.
Ms. Fast.
Good afternoon. For the record, Katie Fast with the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. I have some general comments on both 66 and 67, and some more detailed on 66. We are concerned at the Farm Bureau that the draft comments and ballot title are at this time impersonal and leading, but we do have some improvements for the benefit of Oregon voters. Neither of the titles explains that the taxes are retroactive to the tax year 2009 and permanent. Both ballot captions go beyond the 15-word advisory. We would suggest and request the removal of the phrase maintains current budget for education, healthcare, public safety, and other services. This language goes beyond the original language in the implementing House bills and that these measures would repeal. Additionally, both measure summaries reference potential federal funding opportunities. If the measures pass, we believe this is truly speculative and not appropriate in the ballot title. In details on Measure 67, in the result of a yes vote, we would like some clarification around, on the second line, the 1% or 0.1% for some. That should read, actually, instead of some, C corporations with gross sales over $500,000 with over $500,000 in Oregon gross receipts or gross sales instead of Oregon revenues. Additionally, just once again, this should also clarify that this would be retroactive to 2009 and that these are permanent. Additionally, that this would be on corporations not making a profit for that tax year. Additionally, in the result of the yes vote, these measures increase all corporate filing fees, is our understanding. Moving into the summary, instead of the percent range on the tax rate. We believe it should be approximate tax rate up to $100,000. So there's an understanding of what those tax implications are and what the cap is also. Additionally, toward the end of that summary, repeal the language raises estimate of $2.6 million to maintain current budget. That information will be in the fiscal summary and also not in the original legislation that implemented this measure. Moving into the explanatory statement, once again, it references Oregon revenues, and instead of that term, we believe it would be more appropriate to use the term gross sales or gross receipts, and also clarification in that section again that these are on corporations that are not making a profit. And with that, I'd be happy to answer some questions.
Okay. Any questions for these three panels? Seeing none, thank you both. All. I shouldn't say both, all three of you. The next three people up are Mr. J.L. Wilson, Mr. John Miller, and Mr. Bill Perry. Are they all here? I would indicate while they're coming forward that we have received a couple of written statements prior to this meeting, which will be distributed to the committee. We are receiving written statements throughout this process as people come up. Some people have prepared written statements. And in terms of written testimony to the committee, I believe that's being held open until 5 p.m. this evening.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Perry.
Yeah. Thank you, Co-Chairs Devlin and Roblin. For the record, Bill Perry at the Oregon Restaurant Association, and I think you'll have my quick handout sheet, and I was just going to address basically the four fundamental flaws, mainly with the title in 67, but I'll address some of 66. The first is the title basically says it raises the corporate minimum tax of $10. And by putting the scope of $10 in there, I think it's misleading, because if you're going to $12 or something like that, you could probably just less the $10. But when you're going to raise it from a range from $150,000 to $100,000, I think it gives people a wrong perception. It's not a slight increase. It's a rather large increase. So if you're going to have the $10 in there, I think you have to put the high side of it to give people an idea. And as we go through this, people, I think the statement implies, and some of the previous testifiers talk about how it only raises it on non-profitable companies. That is not a true statement. There are some of my members that fall into the larger range that pay $40,000-$50,000 today. This is still a tax increase for them if they fall into the $100,000 minimum range. So it's going to raise taxes, even the minimum, on some profitable companies is the way it's written today. Second of all, Measure 6, it talks about the minimum tax and the business minimum tax. There is also specifically written in the legislation the business registry filings that have no mention. That's basically not based on any income, and it basically mentions none of that. The other is the word profits, and this, but I find it a little bit offensive, because the statute always addresses business income. It's a total different thing as profits versus business income, and so, or taxable income. So I put a quote of the statute in there. It should talk about taxable income, not profits. I think that is definitely an editorial statement made by some, but taxable income is the issue as it deals with. The other one I want to address is the 2010 versus 2009. Remember, this is going to be voted on in 2010. And so when people are making this decision, it will be in the previous tax year. And one of the examples I want to use is when you look at Measure 66, it talks about the benefit, which is not taxing unemployment benefits in 2009, but it doesn't talk about raising taxes in either one in 2009. So it's kind of like we're going to tell people to get the benefit that they're getting the benefit, but the people that are paying the punishment, we're not going to tell them they have to pay the punishment. I mean, it's a double standard just written into the title as it's read. And finally, I want to address the current maintained current budget levels. There's no guarantee if these pass or fail that current budget levels are going to be maintained. When you look at the last measure that was referred, it had specific cuts in it, and so that was probably a more accurate statement for that. But as the last recession we had, for those of you that were here, remember the penalizing multiple special sessions. These could both pass. These could both fail. It still doesn't prevent you from having to make cuts, potential cuts. That is only going to be derived on revenue. And if some of the economists' predictions of 70,000 job losses come true, you may still have to make budget cuts if these pass because of job loss. And if one passes and not the other, I think you have the implication, or you're implying that you're not going to have to make cuts if one passes. There are so many things that are wrong with that statement, maintaining current budget levels, because many factors are going to play into that, not only passage or failure of this measure. So with that, I'd pass it on.
Mr. Wilson.
Thank you. J.L. Wilson, representing Associated Oregon Industries. You have my written comments, but I'll touch on just a few items. First, dealing with the Measure 66 summary. In the Measure 66 caption, and this phrase is sprinkled throughout the document, you talk about household income above $250,000. There's no such designation, legally or otherwise, regarding household income. It appears to be a catchphrase, but Oregon taxpayers file either as individuals, married or domestic partners, filing individually or jointly, as head of household or widows or widowers. There is no box that says this is household income. I would ask that you consider sticking to the just the straightforward intent, talking about single filers or joint filers as it pertains to this measure. Also, and this is kind of highlighted in the result of the yes vote caption here on Measure 66, why not just use the actual tax rates that will apply upon passage of the measure? That is, the 9% rate will go to either 10.8 for some filers, 11% for others. If you read the yes vote column, it appears that you would be led to believe that taxes would just be increased 1.8% or 2%, which is a modest rate increase, when you could just as easily say that the marginal rate increases by 22%, because that's the increase of 10.8% over 9%. It's a 22% rate hike. So why not just avoid the confusion and use the actual rates that will apply upon passage of the measure? For the Measure 67, the result of the yes vote column, I do believe strongly there should be some mention of the $100,000 cap that the corporate minimum could reach. But if anybody can make hide nor hair of that first sentence, I'd want to know who that is, because when you talk about the 0.1% rate on I don't know what, but if you're going to identify the 0.1% rate, you should identify that House Bill 3405 is implementing a new form of taxation on Oregon companies, which is a gross tax on Oregon sales. Otherwise, the statement just makes no sense. Again, the section alludes to a 1.3% tax rate increase on profits. Again, why not just use the actual tax rate that would apply? In this case, would be a 7.9% rate. Under the result of the no vote, I echo Mr. DeHart's sentiment. By very definition, the statement that some businesses will pay no tax on income is outright falsehood. It should be deleted. Companies that pay the corporate minimum tax pay that tax for the very reason that they have no income, and if they do have income, it's taxed at the 6.6% rate. Under the explanatory statement, I will wrap up and say there are a couple of statements here that I think should be deleted. One is that sole proprietors are not impacted by this measure, and that the measure limits income tax to $150 for S corporations and partnerships. These are misleading, obviously, because the income tax ramifications on these entities are embedded in Measure 66, not Measure 67, and there's no mention of these tax consequences in the Measure 66 document at all. So if we're silent in Measure 66 about these tax consequences, then by all means we should be silent on these consequences in Measure 67. But if we want to mention in the Measure 66 document, then what's here is might be considered fair. And finally, in the explanatory statement, it says, for business entities other than C corporations, such as S corporations and limited liability companies, the measure sets the income taxes those businesses will pay at $150. Listen, if that's the case, then I'd be advocating that every Oregon company support Measure 67. But of course, we know that's not the case because the tax consequences of measure of the income taxes of these companies is, in fact, in Measure 66. So that statement, we believe, should be deleted because it's just flatly inaccurate.
Please proceed.
My name is John Miller. I run a small sub-S corporation, and so I'll limit my comments to Measure 66. I grew up out in Scio, and when I was a little kid playing basketball, if you go far enough up the canyon to Lake Detroit, sometimes you get a couple local guys refereeing your basketball games, and you had some really mysterious calls. And given that this explanation is supposed to be factual and not a lobbying piece, I look at this and I kind of get that same feeling I had playing basketball in Detroit as a sixth grader. I won't go into a lot of specifics because all the ones that I had identified, most have been mentioned or I'm sure will be mentioned, but I'll give you just one example. To make a statement about the fact that these tax increases would maintain a current budget. If you're going to be fair and balanced and call it the same way on both ends, you might also include in here that if these measures were to pass and the taxes were to increase, that unemployment would go up. But I don't think that's the purpose of this statement, is to make speculative statements like that. So, thank you.
Questions for this panel? Thank you very much for being here today. I'm going to call up the next three parties, Mr. Ralph Saperstein, Mr. Bob Goodman, and Mr. Jim Graham.
Please decide your order, or I'll decide.
Mr. Saperstein, please.
Mr. Co-Chair, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Ralph Saperstein. I'm a public policy consultant with the firm Conkling, Fiskman, McCormick, but unlike most of the previous folks, I'm not representing an organization here today. I'm representing Boise Cascade, and Associated Oregon Loggers. And so the difference, I think, in my comments is that I'm telling you real effects on real companies, and I can give you examples. Now, if the comment it is a voting period, I would support everything that's been said before, so you won't have to hear me be redundant. But the businesses I represent would face significant tax increases in the face of the worst recession for the forest products industry since the Great Depression. If the measures pass, Boise, which had to close its pulp mill in St. Helens, but is still running a paper mill there, might now face a tax bill of $100,000. The company, because of the market, they've been unprofitable, yet they're still trying to operate. And I don't know what their sales figures are. They fortunately don't tell me that stuff, but that's what their ultimate minimum tax could be, $100,000. And that's a big impact for a company that's losing money and trying to keep people employed in our rural areas. And I don't know that that's clear at all. It's not mentioned at all in the statement. The draft ballot titles are misleading and would be better described as political propaganda written by proponents of the tax increases. In fact, the draft is a fine voters pamphlet statement for the proponents of the tax increases. And I was glad to hear JL say this, because after I read it, I thought, well, gee, maybe I'll change my vote. And then I read it again, and I realized what it was. But it sort of continues the legislative leadership's pattern throughout this whole tax battle of delay, denial, and deceit. And this is extremely disappointing from our elected officials. The draft statements don't explain the taxes are retroactive for 2009, and that means for small business owners like lawyers and high-income families, they haven't made estimated tax payments for 2009. And so if the measures take effect after January 26th, where will all this money come from? Loggers they cannot make payments on their equipment, and mills can't afford to hire them to cut more timber for them. So where is this money for these new taxes going to come from if they're not making any money through their normal business? Besides the retroactiveness, Measure 67 draft doesn't explain that some businesses that don't make a profit will see their taxes increase, and in Boise's case, it could be from $10, which is an embarrassing low amount, and we should have fixed that years ago, up to $100,000. Nobody would know that from reading the explanatory statement. The retroactivity and $100,000 for unprofitable businesses is important information for voters to know. What this has all been said, and I would reiterate the percentages are not really, they're misleading unless you have some context, because the tax increases could be expressed as 20% increases and not 1.2%. And unfortunately, I can't say anything else, or maybe that's fortunately for your side.
Good afternoon. My name is Bob Goodwin, and I'm here representing actually my wife's business. She owns a plumbing business in town, and I've never done this before, and I thank you for the opportunity. I'm pretty nervous because I haven't done it before. I've seen some of you before, but
I'm nervous. I do it all the time.
But talking over with her, and we discussed this, you know, the two things that caught my eye the most were that I had to come down here for was that it fails to explain that taxes are permanent, and it fails to explain that the taxes are retroactive. If these things are made retroactive as of January 2009, discussing this with my wife the last couple days, we don't see any way that we're going to be able to stay in business. In the height of this recession, as it is, we've laid off a number of people, which are already adding to the unemployment numbers and everything else that's going on in this state. And so if this goes through, like I say, I think we're going to put ourselves out of business, and we'll also be on unemployment or looking for another line of work. And basically that's all I had to say today. Thank you.
Please proceed.
Good afternoon. My name is Jim Graham with Graham Aviation here in Salem. Thank you for allowing us to speak to the committee about our concerns about both these ballot measures and the draft of those titles. A couple of comments I have just in editorial, just in looking over this. Actually, I'm just going to say this, I'm pretty plain spoken. If this had been an SEC filing, there would have been serious problems with the language and the legality of what would have been proposed for that SEC filing. That's how bad I think this thing was done. I understand you're here, and I appreciate the fact that you're here to hear our comments about it, but I would have expected better. As far as things that I specifically saw in the title that I didn't like, I'd like to echo Mr. Brent DeHart's comments. They were right on point. There are things in this proposal that are clearly political propaganda, specifically that to maintain the current budget for education, health care, and public safety. That's purely speculative in nature. It needs to be taken out. We need, and in fact, if you look at the statute 250.035, it says that it should be concise and impartial. That's not impartial. That's a political agenda. Let's take it out of there. Let's get it out, and let's keep this impartial for the voters, because after all, we're trying to do the right thing for them. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, if you'd indulge me, Mr. Goodwin, what did you say your wife's business was?
It's a plumbing business. She
hires plumbers to do the work around town.
And could I further ask how many employees you currently have?
Right now, she has 15.
Thank you.
Okay. Any additional questions? Okay. Thank you very much. We will now go to the next three people. Former representative, but in a different capacity, Mr. Welsh. Dana Harper and Jerry Cohen. Good to see you, Mr. Welsh. If you would start.
Co-Chair Devlin and Co-Chair Roblin and committee members, Jim Welsh, here representing Oregon Cattlemen Association and Beef Northwest. And due to the angst around the original intent of House Bill 2414, I will focus my my comments around the statements of for both Measure 66 and 67 around the result of yes and no vote. And Measure 66 first, the result of a yes vote. This statement is nearly twice the length of the result of a no vote. That will certainly be challenged. A statement should not use misleading percentages of any kind. And the statement fails to explain that the taxes are permanent. And parallel information for retroactivity must be mentioned if the $2,400 in unemployment benefits for 2009 is included. Now, Measure 66, the result of a vote, no vote, the statement should express the current income tax system will be retained, and the budget information is speculative. The statement should not contain information about revenue loss. That information is in the financial estimate. And parallel information for retroactivity, again, must be mentioned if the $2,400 is included of unemployment benefits for 2009. And under Measure 67, result of a yes vote, the statement is, again, nearly twice as the length of a result of the result of a no vote. Corporate minimum tax and business minimum tax is redundant. Should not be stated that way and does not outline the change from a flat minimum tax to a new tax on Oregon gross sales for companies that do not make a profit. And again, the statement does not explain that taxes are permanent or retroactive and should not use misleading percentages. Increases all corporate filing fees, not just some. And the information, both draft statements explaining how the funds raised will maintain current budget for education, health care, and public safety is purely speculative and misleading and should not contain information about revenue raised. That information is included, again, in the financial estimate. Under a no vote in 67, the information in both draft statements explaining how the funds raised would maintain current budget for education, health care, public safety, again, speculative and misleading, and should not contain information about revenue lost. Again, that should be in the that's included in financial estimate. And some businesses will pay no tax on income is false and misleading, as you heard before, and retains $10 corporate minimum income tax does not explain that the legislation maintains current tax rates for corporate minimum tax companies not turning a profit, as well as the corporate income tax profitable companies. And so far, you know, the information that is provided in these draft statements really represent shameful, I think, representation of what should be fair and unbiased and should be following, you know, the guidelines within ORS 250.035 and should be following legislative intent.
Thank you, Mr. Welsh. Ms. Heppner.
Dana Hepper, Advocacy Director with Stand for Children, stands organization that organizes citizens to advocate for the strong public schools and other quality services that children need to thrive. And I would like to speak specifically to the ballot titles drafted, and even more specifically to the phrase maintains current budget for education, healthcare, public safety, other services. Dan spends a lot of time talking to members of the community. We hear all the time that folks are confused about what ballot measures will do and therefore confused about how to vote on them. And we've already heard a lot of confusion about this measure specifically. In particular, what does it mean to vote yes versus what it means to vote no, and some confusion over those choices. And we believe that what's written here is direct and accurate and fair. The ballot title is direct, accurate, and fair. People should know what the measures do, who they impact, what happens if they pass, what happens if they fail. And with regard to the maintains current budget for education, healthcare, public safety, and other services, it doesn't say that it maintains the services or the programs that are available to Oregonians. What it says is that it maintains the budget. And the budget that was passed by this chamber clearly includes the estimated revenue from these measures. And so maintaining these measures, in turn, maintains the budget. If these measures are overturned, there would be a $733 million hole in the budget that's been drafted and passed by this body. So Stanford Children believes it's a vital piece of information that voters should have when they're deciding how to vote, yes or no. They deserve to know not just what the measures do, but what that means for the state services in their community, which, as you very well know, are primarily education, healthcare, and public safety. The Attorney General and the Oregon Supreme Court have upheld this basic idea numerous times and, in fact, agreed that budget impacts should be included when the general fund budget will be reduced. And they were included in Measures 30 and 59 and are included in Initiative Petition 19, which is currently circulating for the November 2010 ballot. These ballot titles were all written or certified by the Attorney General. And this information is vital to letting voters know what their vote means. And so Stanford Children is appreciative of this committee in their work to find a fair and clear ballot title. Thank you.
Please proceed.
Committee co-chairs and esteemed committee, my name is Jerry Cohen. I'm state director for AARP Oregon State Office. And we, with more than 535,000 members, age 50 plus, across the state, are very attuned to the fact that we are at high stakes for this January election, particularly for Oregon's aging population. Because of the complexity of both measures 66 and 67, we believe it's vital that the ballot titles and summaries give all voters a full and accurate description of what's contained in the measures and whom they could impact. We commend the committee's effort to ensure that voters are fully informed about the measures when they look at their voters' pamphlets and the ballots in January. The draft titles and the summaries give clear view of the scope of the measures and what happens if the measures are approved or rejected. In addition to describing what the measures do, AARP believes it's imperative that the captions describe what happens if the measures are approved. In Measures 66 and 67, aren't created in a vacuum. We know that. They were drafted in response to an economic crisis that further threatened funding for essential services, namely education, health care, public safety, and certainly looking at Oregon's in-home and community-based care, a model across the nation for seniors and people with disabilities. Services in total that I've mentioned that make up more than 90% of the state budget. The legislature balanced the budget to protect these services already deeply cut by passing House Bills 2649 and 3405. Without them, these areas stand to lose $733 million. That's not including federal matching funds. The budgets for education, health care, public safety, and again, our in-home and community-based care can really only be maintained if Measures 66 and 67 pass. It's indisputable that these measures maintain current general fund budget that pay primarily for core services that are critical to our state's future, our economy, and our quality of life. And we don't believe it's realistic
for just a moment. For just a moment, actually.
Yes, sir.
And I'm not taking this away from your time. Could you try to keep your statement more towards the accuracy of the ballot?
Yes.
Of the ballot title and the explanatory statement?
We believe that the language used here is fair, realistic, crucial information that voters are asking to use, and without knowing what their vote means for the budget, and the effect will have on core services like our education, healthcare, and public safety. So, in conclusion, we believe that that core information in the title and the caption and the explanation allow voters to make a fully formed decision on the measures. Thank you.
Any questions for this panel? Thank you all, and thank you particularly Mr. Welsh. Mr. Welsh and I served in the legislature. In fact, he chaired one of the first committees that I served on.
Taught you everything you know?
Yes. Okay. The next three parties are Ms. Cappy Eaton, Mr. John Mullen, and Mr. David Williams. And Cappy, because you're one of my favorites, could you start? Okay. I didn't see that you actually had two people signed up, but that's fine with you if they would like to stay. Ms. Easley? For the audience's sake, Ms. Eaton and I see each other regularly, and she sees, I think, Representative Roblin
as
relatively regularly because we're both the chairs of the respective rules committees, and she's with the League of Women Voters, and she's always there to comment on everything we do relative to elections.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, people, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Cappy Eaton, the governance coordinator for the League of Women Voters, and with me today is Marge Easley, the president of the League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League of Women Voters of Oregon is a grassroots, nonpartisan political organization that encourages informed citizen participation in government. Oregon's initiative, referendum, and referral system puts ultimate faith in voters to make the decision that shapes statewide policy. However, voters can only make fully informed decisions if they are given adequate information about what they're voting on. The League of Women Voters applauds the legislature not only for having the courage to pass these measures, but for making sure that voters have all the information they need to make fully informed votes on these measures. Normally, ballot measures appear on ballots with many other issues and candidates, so their space is limited. Measures 66 and 67 will be appearing on the ballot by themselves. The League appreciates the Legislative Committee's use of the ballot space to fully describe Measures 66 and 67 and what they mean for Oregon voters. Because Measures 66 and 67 will be voted in January's special election, there will be lower awareness of the election than for more high-profile elections. Many voters will only find out about the measures when they receive their ballot in the mail. This makes it even more important that the ballot titles give a full and accurate description of the measures, and even more importantly, the impact on state services. The League believes that democracy can only thrive when voters are given all pertinent information. The opponents of these measures will have complained about including the budget impacts of these measures in the ballot title. We disagree wholeheartedly and believe the draft titles are necessary in giving voters a complete view. Both sides can disagree about tax policy and government funding levels, but there is no denying that these measures protect the existing general fund budget, which pays for education, health care, public safety, and other services. The draft titles written by the committee allow voters to be fully informed when they cast their vote. The League supports these drafts because they are clear, accurate, and will reduce confusion among voters. Thank you for the opportunity to provide these comments.
Ms. Easley, did you wish to offer anything?
No, I defer my time to Kathy.
Okay. Please proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee, for the record, John Mullen. I'm co-chair of the Human Services Coalition of Oregon. We're a statewide organization of about 80 organizations and individuals, and we come together because of our concern about human service issues in the state of Oregon, protecting those that are most vulnerable. First of all, we're here because we are very much in support of the ballot titles, drafts, the way they're written. In listening to the guidance of the co-chair about not talking about the impacts of the measures, I'm going to depart from my testimony for just a moment and just mention that following the budget process, as I do when I'm down here in session, we all know that the budget, of course, obviously is made up of revenue and expenditure items. We watched as the legislature made some difficult choices about making reductions to the budget using federal dollars that came in from the stimulus package and using rainy day and reserve funds. And then the legislature recognized that there was a hole beyond that to maintain what is called the current service level. So I believe that the ballot titles are very accurate in talking about what the budget actually does. It's a matter of revenue and expenditures, and when you adopt the legislatively adopted budget, it is based on what is projected for revenue and what is projected for expenditures. As you all know, that varies during any biennium. There'll be shifts and there'll be differences in patterns and all that. But I believe that it's very, very accurate the way the draft ballot titles are written. And we think that people that are out in the community, including the people that we serve, will very much be able to understand what's at stake when they read the ballot titles. And I believe they're very accurate. And I appreciate the time to be able to testify today. Thank you.
Mr. Williams.
Thank you, Co-Chairs Devlin and Roblin, and members of the committee. David Williams with the Oregon School Boards Association, representing each one of Oregon's 1,400 publicly elected school and education service district board members in all corners of the state of Oregon. We fully support the draft as written. The titles are factually detailed, concise, and accurately describe complex tax and budget policy. Most importantly, if a voter who hasn't heard anything else about these measures reads the ballot title along with the summary and explanatory statement, it gives them a full understanding of the complexities of the two measures along with the interplay the measures have with the state budget and services. The titles provide a level of detail in the mechanics of the measures that are necessary for an accurate understanding of the measures and their impact. Neither ballot title, however, attempts to hide the fact that these measures raise taxes on some individuals and some corporations in Oregon. Both ballot titles, in fact, lead with this very important detail. However, the titles also accurately include the fact that these measures will have an impact on the state budget as approved by the legislature this year. We believe voters should be aware of the budget implications these measures have when they are deciding on a yes or no vote. School districts around Oregon have approved their own operating budgets based on the funding from these measures. Measures 66 and 67 are necessary to maintain those budgets. If the measures fail, a significant amount of rebudgeting on both the state and local level will have to occur based on decisions in January on these measures. For both measures, the draft titles give voters full information on who will be affected, to what extent, who won't be affected, and what the impact will be on state revenues. Inclusion of this fact by the committee will ensure that voters have the most basic of information so that they can make an informed decision without making a decision out of old cloth. OSBA strives to provide school districts and local voters with factual information about education funding, local and state revenue, and the impacts on said items by proposed legislation as well as proposed initiatives and referenda. We believe the proposed ballot titles for measures 66 and 67 provide voters with the kind of factual information about about tax policy, public services, the state budget, and the intersect of all three, giving them an opportunity to make a real choice with their vote rather than a false choice. And we would urge the committee to substantially maintain the language as drafted. Thank you very much.
Any questions for these witnesses?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. You can take this as a question or you can take this as a comment, but all three of you emphasize the accuracy that should be in these statements. And I guess I would ask you, if these statements say nothing about retroactivity, is that accurate? If these statements do not say that there is a gross receipts tax embedded in these measures, or one of these measures, and the state of Oregon has never had such a tax before, a tax outside of income tax. Would you say it's accurate if these two things are not clearly spelled out in here?
Is that directed to Mr. Williams?
I guess it's to all three, because they both said this needs to be accurate, and I would submit that those are accurate pieces of information that are not made clear in a non-confusing manner in this. And if you want to take it as a question and respond, feel free. If not, it's just a comment.
Thank you, co-chairs and Representative Berger. I will speak to the gross receipts side of that. I'm afraid you get to a level of tax policy that may be a little beyond my meager knowledge, other than to say the mechanism contained in the statute is an alternative corporate minimum that is not simply a rate-based tax, but a dollar amount based on a metric to determine size of businesses. To the retroactivity piece, I would say, however, the legislature enacted these statutes. When they enacted them in the 2009 tax year for the tax year in which they were being enacted. It was not the choice of the legislature to refer these to the ballot. It was the choice of the legislature to pass these measures and balance a budget for this biennium that does some semblance of preservation of services. And I think to that point, the measures were crafted and passed not retroactively, but in stasis.
Mr. Chair, thank you for taking a stab at it. But the fact of the matter is, we're talking about the ballot title, and I think this would be important information for the voters to know, and I think that's my point. So I'll let you off the hook from now on. No, please. Please. No.
Okay. Any additional questions?
I do have a follow-up question to Mr. Williams regarding how much information and clear this information is to the voter. You mentioned something about the corporate minimum tax. Could you repeat that? Because I think it's clearly incorrect, and so maybe we do need to, in the ballot title, talk about the corporate minimum tax a little bit. What was your explanation on the corporate minimum tax, again, about rates on income? And
I'm sorry.
Could you repeat to me what...
In my response to Representative Berger... My understanding is if we're talking about the portion that does apply to corporations that do not report a profit in the state of Oregon, is that correct? Is that what we're discussing?
Well, I'm just asking what your comment on definition of what the corporate minimum tax was and how it's being changed, and therefore it's not needed to be explained in here. So.
My comment is pertinent to the portion of the bills that raise the minimum amount paid by corporations that do not report a profit in the state of Oregon. And the measures as passed by the legislature do not, they enact something that approximate a tax rate, but what they enact is a dollar amounts at levels of business size in the state of Oregon.
You mean, can I clarify? A range of sales, basically, a range of sales between this point. It's not an exact rate per dollar of sales. It's bracketed.
So. I understand. Well, I guess my concern is that it's still not a good understanding of a voter, a potential voter here, that understands that. So maybe we do need to look at how we clarify what that corporate minimum tax really is or isn't.
Did you wish to respond?
So, Mr. Chair, just to add that I think our point is, given the limited space available, and really what we're talking about, at least from my perspective, is the ballot caption, which is often referred to as just the ballot title. Given the limited space, I believe that the draft accurately balances the needs of the voter to know multiple sides of the issue, that it clearly balances that there is a tax increase contained, but it also clearly balances that that those measures have a budgetary impact, and that those budgetary impacts impact services that the state provides.
Any additional questions? Seeing none, thank you all for being here today. Very much appreciate people staying on schedule and staying within the allotted time. This is actually a little bit earlier than I anticipated. But what I'm going to do now is to recess the committee for approximately 9 minutes. And when we return, Representative Roblin will be chairing the committee. This will give you enough time to stretch. For those of you who are not familiar with the Capitol, necessary facilities are in that direction and near the rotunda. So I will recess for 9 minutes.
We're going to come back to order here on our joint committee.
9 minutes on the notes.
And I'll call our next three people, Jack Dempsey, Otto Schell, and Roy Thorpe. And again, since we're getting back, we'll get the little sign up after 4 minutes and so on, so that everybody knows that's the same procedure we had before.
Wonderful. Thank you. My name is Jack Dempsey. I'm here representing the Oregon Nurses Association. We have reviewed the draft ballot titles and do believe that they provide a clear understanding of the measures before the voters in January. I do want to commend the legislature and this committee for creating this open process and for drafting these titles in a way that will be clear to voters when they're voting on Measures 66 and 67. We support these drafts as written and encourage this committee to pass them out as is. When voters read their ballot in January, we're confident that the ballot titles will inform them of the details of this tax package as well as the stakes of these measures. As you're all aware, the legislature balanced the budget last time with cuts, with revenues, federal stimulus, and tax increases. You did make a series of painful cuts, but you were able to save some key services through these measures. And if these measures aren't passed, then the cuts to the general fund will come. Therefore, I think that these ballot titles do a good job in relaying these facts. And like I said, I would encourage the committee to pass them out as is, giving voters a clear understanding of what these measures do and how the general fund is impacted by them. Thank you.
Thank you. Next. Hello.
Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Otto Schell. I'm legislative director with the Oregon PTA. The Oregon PTA has a 100-year history of advocating for children on things such as school funding and other things that impact children. And I'm here today to also join with my colleagues in supporting the drafts, the language that has been drafted around the two ballot measures, the two referrals. When the legislature passed the general fund budget in the spring, school districts across Oregon created their budgets based on the activities of the legislature, in particular House Bills 2649 and 3405. Because of the economic crisis and some of the cuts that Jack just referenced, many districts used their reserve funds, were forced to make layoffs, cut programs, and in some circumstances they considered shortening the year, even with the funds that are promised by the tax packages that we're talking about here today. If Measure 66 and 67 are overturned, it will mean that those budgets and the budgets for other critical state agencies will be short $733 million. We believe that the language as proposed helps the voters understand what is at stake here, and I believe one of the prior speakers said this is a high-stakes discussion that Oregonians are going to have. We, the Oregon PTA, we believe that voters need to know what is impacted, who is impacted by the potential shortfall of the budget if the no vote is brought forward. Oregon PTA applauds the committee co-chairs for drafting ballot titles that explain the mechanics and the measures well and how they will impact the budget. We support the titles as written and believe that the titles give the voters the information they need to have an informed vote in January. Thank you.
Thank you. Roy. I hope I said that right.
Rowie.
Okay.
Co-chairs Roblin and Devlin and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Roe Thorpe. I'm the executive director of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Oregon. Planned Parenthood Advocates of Oregon supports the draft ballot titles on both Measures 66 and 67. As written, these titles will provide voters with a clear description of the measures when they open their ballots. Because these measures are necessary to maintain the balanced general fund budget, which pays for basic services, it's crucial that voters know what happens to those services if they vote yes or no. In order to make an informed decision on these measures, voters need to know what will happen to the budget if Measures 66 and 67 are upheld or rejected.
In my previous role as Executive Director of Basic Rights Oregon, before I was repurposed, I have firsthand knowledge of what can happen when voters are confused about the results of their vote. In 2004, we led the campaign to defeat Measure 36, the constitutional ban on same-sex marriage. The constitutional amendment was just a single line, and yet we found that many of our supporters were confused about which way to vote. For instance, after the ballots came out that October, we made calls to supporters to encourage them to return their ballots. In a troubling number of cases, we heard this from our supporters. We already turned in our ballots, but don't worry. We're with you. We already voted yes. A yes vote put the ban into the Constitution and was the exact opposite of what we were advocating. Ballot titles need to be crystal clear in order to avoid confusion on both sides of the measure. Planned Parenthood supports these draft titles because they provide detailed information on the proposed tax increases, where the money will go, and what happens to the state's budget if the measures are approved or rejected. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel?
Arnie.
Oh, Senator.
Has anybody on this panel ever owned a business and paid any of these taxes that we're talking about?
These taxes in Oregon?
Right.
I haven't, but I was a partner in a law firm and met
you personally have not had familiarity with paying these business taxes?
My wife is a psychologist. She operates an independent private practice. She pays them every year. We file jointly. And
sole proprietor?
You bet.
So she doesn't pay the corporate minimum tax?
She pays some of the taxes that were discussed today, and that was my confusion.
Okay. So.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you all for being here. We had a request from a person who left to work so she could be here, and I would like to take her next. So, Carolyn, if you want to come up, we'll get your testimony first, and then we have about three others. So we'll let you go, and then we'll...
I just wanted to know where I was on the list.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll give you a chance so you can get back to work.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. My name is Carolyn Keith, and I have a small business, an interior design business here in Salem. I operate out of my home. I'm an LLC, and my husband is president of a larger manufacturing company down in Lebanon, and since January 1, that company has gone from 90 employees to 36. Employees currently. In order to stay afloat, they are working 1 week on, 1 week off. Anyway, I'll get back to
the
wording.
Thanks.
All that to say is they're doing everything they can to watch their dollars where they're spent, and so am I as a business owner. And as I read this, I've got this information on the internet this morning at about 10:30. And as I read this quickly and not really studying it like many of these other people have, I felt that the explanations of these tax increases, to know that they're retroactive, was not very wasn't very self-explanatory, as Vicki said. In fact, I was glad she said the two comments earlier. I'm going, phew. Now I don't have to bring that up because I didn't think that the retroactivity of those taxes being increased was explained very well. I didn't see that they were, as far as the information that the taxes increases are permanent was explained very well. So those were my two comments. And then also, too, I feel that that we should not include taxpayers may deduct, as that information does not appear in the bill and is not applicable to the tax increase impact. So those were just my simple comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you coming. Any questions?
Thank you.
Oh.
I'm going to ask the same question. So you do have experience paying these corporate minimum taxes?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. So now, Jeff Stone, Roger Beyer, and Andrew. Over? Over. Okay. I just keep wanting to read more in. Sorry about that. We should have saved you for the very end.
Go first. Yeah. Sure. For the record, my name is Andrew Ober. I serve as the executive director of the Oregon Republican Party. I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here this afternoon and the chance to bring some light to the severe flaws with the ballot titles for Measures 66 and 67 as they are currently written. I'm here today representing the Oregon Republican Party and our members, but this is not a partisan issue. It's not a Republican issue. It's not a Democrat issue. It's an Oregon issue and one that has the potential to greatly damage and weaken our state and our economy. It's no surprise that the Oregon Republican Party was opposed to the millions of dollars in new taxes and fees.
Keep on the measures itself, though, for the most part.
I believe that it's important to make the point here. We were vocal when the Republican legislators were denied the chance to have a fair shot on their back-to-basics budget. We were outraged at the proposed plan. I believe that it is important to the fact brought up earlier with Mr. McCormick as to the fact of the political nature that this has through the entire process. And we share the frustrations of hundreds of thousands of Oregonians at the delay tactics by the governor in signing the bills and taking the political rights of Oregonians. But now we come to the latest effort by the majority party to mislead Oregon voters and damage Oregon's political process.
What would you put down as examples of what we should do to make this better in your
edit? Right. I appreciate the time and effort that went into crafting these drafts. However, I would like to point out some critical errors that need to be addressed before the titles are finalized. The information in both statements does not explain that both tax increases are retroactive. Taxpayers have not withheld money to cover these tax increases for the 2009 tax year, and that they need to understand that point. Nowhere in the draft statements does it explain that these tax increases are permanent. This was a political ploy to exploit a short-term economic crisis, which could be made longer by if these taxes are passed, to forward a political agenda. And the drafts are full of misleading speculation concerning budgets and cuts to specific programs. It's the job of the legislature to allocate dollars within the budget, and neither of these measures are tied to specific programs or departments. At a time when Oregon has one of the highest unemployment rates in the nation, these tax increases will force small businesses to close, companies to move out of Oregon or decide not to locate here, cost more Oregonians than
what? I need to hear what you want for specifics. Thanks.
While the authors of these draft ballot titles went to great lengths to speculate on the potential impacts of that these tax increases not passing, it is not speculation to say that Oregon's economy will suffer if they do pass.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. Stone or Mr. Byer? Mr. Stone.
Mr. Co-Chairs, Jeff Stone, Oregon Association of Nurseries. It takes quite a bit to get nurserymen and nurserywomen off their tractors to come in and review ballots, ballot titles, but I'd like to give you at least my thoughts on the content of the ballot titles themselves, and hopefully they're instructive. On its face, it seems to me that ballot titles need to be impartial and provide the voters with an explanation, not making necessarily the case. That's the rule for campaigns and of that matter. The thing that struck to our core was the lack of a couple things you've already heard here today about the gross receipts tax, about the permanency and the retroactivity. I think all those things help inform the voter about what their choices are that are ahead of them. The last thing I would state is that word choices are important. When you talk about revenue, it does not mean profit. And so I would be very careful. When I read through it, I must say that I had a reaction that was not altogether positive. But I want to be thoughtful and provide the committee with detailed changes. But I wanted to make sure that I don't have those with you for you today to consider. But I would say that I would implore this committee to use their words carefully to explain, not make the case, because that will be brought forth in a very vigorous debate. Our members debated this issue, and we were actually waiting for the ballot titles so we can really see what the voters are going to be looking at. But right now, I think you have some work to do. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and members of the committee. I'm Roger Byer. I'm here representing the Oregon Seed Council and the Oregon Dairy Farmers. Much like you heard about the nurserymen, these groups discussed these issues very closely and very at length before taking a vote on whether to oppose or reject or support the vote coming forward. But this is not about the vote. This is about the ballot title. So I will mainly speak to ballot measure 67, the corporate minimum tax. This is the one that my members have the most problem with the measure itself and the ballot title as presented. Most, I think, in fact, probably everything I have picked out that I think should be changed has already been mentioned today, so I will just very briefly re-mention those issues in the ballot title itself. Nowhere does it mention that this is a gross revenue or gross receipts tax. That is the very, it's to the heart of the vision of why my two groups oppose these measures, is because of the fact that it is a gross receipts or gross revenue tax. Had it not been for that aspect of it, I can't say I'd be sitting here now that saying my groups oppose these measures, but because of that being in them, they oppose them, and that is nowhere mentioned in anywhere in this statement. I think that needs to be there. Next, again, when you get down into the result of a yes vote, you have approximately 0.1% rate for some corporations over $500,000 in Oregon revenue. Again, that needs to be gross revenue, and it needs to be spelled out very clearly that is gross, not net. Under the result of a no vote, some businesses will pay no tax on income. Again, you've already heard, and I will reiterate, that is not a factual statement. If a business is paying no tax on income, it is probably because it's an S-Corp, an LLC, an LLP, or an individual proprietorship, and then they pay the tax at a personal rate, which is actually higher than the corporate rate. So to say they pay no tax on income is not a factual statement. Get into the summary. You have a sentence that says all other businesses pay no minimum income tax, profits tax. That sentence doesn't make much sense as it is, and again, it ignores the fact that S-Corps and LLCs and sole proprietorships pay at a higher rate already than what the corporate rate is. So that is a very misleading and confusing sentence, partial sentence, I might point out. Oregon revenues, the sentence below that, Oregon revenues will pay minimum tax on approximately 0.1% of Oregon sales. Again, that needs to say gross sales. That is the key to this corporate minimum. And limits income tax to $150 for S-Corps and partnerships. That is not a factual statement because it does not limit the income tax to $150. You heard someone else say if that was factual, we would be here supporting this tax increase. These entities pay at a higher rate on their personal returns. And finally, on the Measure 67, the last sentence, because some state money brings in federal matching funds, state could receive more federal money if measure passes, less federal money if it fails. That, again, is not factual because the federal match dollars can come from any source. It doesn't have to be from either of these two tax increase sources. When we get to Measure 66, very briefly, again, you've heard these before, raises tax on household income. This should be joint income. Household income is not an issue, or not a term of art in Oregon statutes. Tax rates of 1.8% on taxable income between $250,000 and $500,000, 2% above $500,000 for households. Again, households should not be there. It should be for joint filers. And it's confusing to know 1.8% on top of what? Zero? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. And I appreciate any questions for these three.
That's the same panel. Anybody here not have direct experience with the corporate business taxes or represent those that do?
Co-chair is Senator Telfer. I am a co-owner and president and or secretary treasurer and vice president in two different corporations, an LLC personally, and many of my members are C-Corp, S-Corps, LLCs, and personal joint proprietorships.
Senator Rosenbaum. Right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a comment that I think it's important to note, and I think the first witness did note this, that this language, which is just in a draft form now and which we're trying to figure out, does it meet the standard in the law for accuracy and impartiality, ultimately, whatever language this committee adopts can be appealed to the Supreme Court, and those Supreme Court justices will be looking at it, and they will decide if it is accurate and if it is impartial. So no one should feel that there's some conspiracy that we're party to avoid those standards, because it's not possible. And I also just wanted to point out, I'm not sure who brought this up, but several people have mentioned using that we should use terms like gross receipts tax, that this language, I think, I'm not a lawyer who does this, but I think it's supposed to meet a test that an average voter could actually understand the language they see on the ballot. So the effort here is to put terms in front of people, even if they're not the technical legal terms that a tax lawyer might use, that they can understand when they vote. And I don't think gross receipts tax is one of those terms that most people even would know what it means. So I think that's important, too, is that one of the things we're struggling with is to have language that's accurate, but also that a reasonably literate person could really understand without being a lawyer, a lobbyist, a legislator, or anybody but just a voter trying to inform themselves.
Are you looking for a comment?
If you have one, sure.
I was looking for the question as well, but yeah.
Well, I guess I'll put on my tree farmer hat, and I think what some of the panelists in front of us said is very true. We're looking for accurate statements. And if you want to look at accuracy, these ballot titles are good at saying what may or may not happen if you vote yes or no, maintains current budget for education, health care, public safety, and other services. That's very clearly stated. But where I see the issues personally, from an average voter, not as a lobbyist, a legislator, or any of the above-mentioned tax attorneys, whatever you said, Senator, this, and I'm speaking to Measure 67, it does not clearly say what the tax is. And if you're looking for accuracy, I think you need accuracy on both sides.
With regards to the gross receipts tax, if the committee were to use gross sales tax, I don't think you'd have any objection.
Not. Any other questions for the group? Thank you very much. And currently, the last two people, Thomas S. Harrison IV and Todd D. Fulmer. And is there anybody else who we have not called, who didn't get a chance to sign up, who's here, who would like to testify, because we have another seat? We need to know your name, and you can come on up and let us know when you come up. You can stay here with these three, however. So, Mr. Harrison.
Thank you, co-chairs Roblin and Devlin, committee members. My name is Tom Harrison. I am a software designer and independent consultant in Oregon City, Oregon. I have been an employer in the past. I am not one now, and I sure hope to be one in the future. It seems to me that in a war of words like this, it's the voter who loses. I know it's hard to be truly neutral because each of us has his own point of view. That said, I don't think the draft language is complete enough to properly inform voters of the impact of these measures. Both these measures target high producers in Oregon. When you take high producers to the woodshed, it's the workers who get spanked. Cascade Policy has done a great job of explaining that, estimating multiple thousands of jobs lost if these measures stay on the books. Please don't let incomplete language, not explaining the secondary impact of jobs lost and recovery slowed, deceive the voters into imagining that they will not pay the price for the checks these measures command others to write. Please adjust the language to complete the financial impact picture so that voters are better informed. After all, the most important budgets in Oregon are the budgets of working families, and those depend on jobs. Thank you.
Thank you. No, we'll go over to...
Thank you. My name is Ted Fulmer. I am a lumberman. I was born and raised in Oregon. My wife is a sixth-generation Oregonian. I've got grandchildren that are eighth-generation Oregonian. It's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I love the state. Lived here all my life. I've been paying taxes since I was 13 years old, delivering the Oregonian in Tigard. I still pay taxes. I've had a big C corporation, lumber wholesale company, you know, lots of money in sales. I figured out how to make a small fortune in the lumber business. You start with a large one. It works that way. Last 2 years have been pure hell in the lumber business. That's no way. I've been doing this for 35 years, and it is very, very difficult. Increase in taxes are going to kill us. I'm one of the ones that's been out with the APA getting signatures signed on the petitions to get this thing in front of the voters. That's how strongly I feel about this. I'm one of the ones that stood in the rain at the DMV to get signatures on these things. I'm one of the ones that wants to save the state of Oregon. I'm serious about this. I think that we need to bring some common sense into this. You two gentlemen are smart. You know, Thomas Jefferson had said that politicians are supposed to fear the citizens and the citizens shouldn't fear the politicians. You don't look very fearful to me. And hopefully I don't look very fearful to you. I think we should work together. Why can't we work together? Why can't you take two people that have a lot of knowledge on getting these initiatives on the ballot and sit down with them and draft a title to these ballots that makes sense for everybody so we don't have to be here and waste our day? I mean, retroactivity. I can't afford to pay taxes again next year for money I made this year. I can't afford the increase. I don't have the money. The permanency of the taxes. You know, we're already the second highest. Anyway, I shouldn't be going into that. All right, sorry. The title of the draft ballot needs to be pure and simple. It needs for guys like me that make a living in the lumber industry can pick it up and read it and say, oh, okay, I agree or disagree. How hard is that? Why can't we do that? That's really what I ask. I really plead with you. Oregon's a great state. But I've got friends that say, what are you doing here? Why don't you get out of here? Well, folks, if this passes and taxes increase, again, I shouldn't say that, then we're going to be in trouble as a state, financially and socially. Now, I would suggest then that please call on a couple of gentlemen here, or ladies, that have a lot more knowledge than I do about how these petitions or initiatives were written. Bring them into your room, sit down on a table, hammer out a good agreement that makes sense that everybody can agree with. Then we won't have to go through all this other stuff, and we can have an agreement and go forward with it. Thank you.
Thank you. And be sure to make your name so we can get it written down here.
For the record, my name is Davis Dyer. Last name is spelled D-Y-E-R.
Thank you, Davis.
I'm here representing myself. One understanding that I have regarding ballot titles and all of the stuff that goes with it, the captions, is that it is meant to explain the law or the actual initiative or the legislation. As such, all of the language that says raises estimated $261 million and so forth is superfluous and should not be in the ballot title, because that language or the results of the law is not in the law itself. And as far as the supposed or the alleged discrepancies or bias on the yes vote and no vote, a really simple explanation or a really simple solution to that is simply to say result of a yes vote approves legislation or sustains legislation, result of a no vote rejects legislation, and leave it at that, because that is simple, to the point, unbiased, and all of the rest of the stuff in here can, or at least most of the rest of the stuff, talking about the results or supposed results, can go into the proponents or opponents' explanations in the pamphlet. It can go into the advertisements that both sides are going to be hitting us hard with come probably the first part of December, and that's all campaign related, and it does not need to be in the ballot title or the caption. Thank you.
Any questions for this panel? Thank you very much for taking your time and being here. That does exhaust the lists that we have currently. We have placed on the internet so people know this ballot title and so on, and we are accepting comments until 5 o'clock tonight. So we will be instructing Beth to get all of those to us, and she'll try to compile those and get them to you either first thing tomorrow. If you want to stay up and wait, though, or you're going to be here until you get that done.
Probably. I will. I'll wait till 5 o'clock, and then I'll compile them all and email them to all of your email addresses. So if you do have an additional email address that you'd like me to send it to, make sure that I have that before.
And then I hope, and I will, Rep. Senator Devlin and I will probably get together at some point and maybe be around at 5 o'clock to see if there's things that we can look at. If we can come to a kind of an agreement on another draft, we'll get it for you for tomorrow. If not, we'll work on that tomorrow as a committee, and look forward to seeing everybody tomorrow. Is there anything else you would, Senator Devlin?
No. Just that I very much appreciate all the members of the committee today, and I appreciate particularly the members in the audience who testified, and everybody stayed on time and stayed on task to a very large extent, given that our actual task here is actually the ballot title and the explanatory statement.
Yeah, and I want to say the same thing. I do appreciate all the comments that were made from people, and I sorry that you have to call people sometimes when it's not about the issue that I have to work on. The real issue is we do want to have a ballot title that explains is open. This process was built to make it open so that we would have this kind of a hearing so people could come here and express their opinions about it. We take that seriously. I think everybody who agreed and is on this committee to look at that stuff very, very carefully. And the goal is that people, when they make a decision to vote on the 26th, will actually know exactly what they're voting on and what it's going to do. I think that's what democracy is about. And this is an open process. I think, to reiterate what Senator Rosenbaum said, there is a follow-up process. If people don't agree with what happens, that goes to the Supreme Court. So, you know, I appreciate what we did as a legislature in moving forward, and I appreciate everybody coming here today to give their testimony. Any other concluding comments? I just want to say thank you to everybody.
Yes, just a technical, Beth, you will email to our legislative accounts.
Yes,
automatically.
I will email it to that automatically. Okay, so if you have an additional email that you'd like me to include, just let me know.
Thank you.
Any other technical issues or anything that people want to know what's going on? Again, I thank you all for being here, and our hearing for today on the 20th is adjourned. Beef and beef.